It is 11 minutes after 8 a.m. Happy Wednesday morning to you. And we have with us this morning, I say we, like I'm got a whole room full of people with me here. I have with me this morning Chief Brian Rafferty from Holmes Fire District 1. It's been quite a bit since we had you join with us and talk fire safety and fire numbers and all that fun stuff. So good morning and good welcome back.
Yeah, it's been like 2 months, but seems like
forever, a year. Yeah, right?
I don't know, a long time ago.
So much as it was like so last year.
Right. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
It's still early enough I can make that joke.
Yeah. It's crazy how time
Christmas. We're halfway through January.
No kidding.
So How did things wrap up for Fire District 1 for 25?
Well, we were very, very busy. I know every month came in here and talked about calls were up, but we finished the year with 1,391 calls. So that was an increase of 142 calls or 11% up from 2024. I know in 2022 was one of our higher years. We were at like 1,419. So we were getting pretty close to that number again. You know, and it used to be, you know, our numbers were up. We were assisting some of the neighboring departments, mm-hmm. smaller departments that were having some difficulty. But, you know, I got to give them a lot of credit. They have really picked it up, you know, Kilbuck and Prairie Township and all our neighbors. Like, we're not going mutual aid there near what we did last year before. They are doing an awesome job of getting out.
More of them have full-time people in there
right
now.
Some of them, you know, the smaller departments are staffing during the day. You know, some of the busier times are when people aren't available, you know, to come in for calls. So they're doing an awesome job getting out.
You guys are just getting more calls of your
yeah,
own now.
Yeah, I can't really pinpoint if anything specific that increased. Obviously, we have, you know, four nursing homes in our area, with Danbury being one of the newer ones, and I think is now pretty full. Obviously, that's a lot of our calls are assisting them. I can't narrow it. Nothing is out of the ordinary anywhere else. So I
think sometimes things just happen.
Yeah, it's just been an increase all around. And you know, we've known for a while, it's the baby boomer generation. They're at those ages now that they fall. And
they're the biggest generation.
Yeah.
There's a lot
more in this age range of, you know, the older population. So I think our calls have been increasing more just for things like that. So, you know, our fire calls, some of the more detailed numbers, you know, for our fire calls, we were at 52. And that's, you know, last year we were at 55. And that includes, you know, full-on houses on fire, mm-hmm. buildings on fire, which those are very rare. I mean, that, you know, I think I've said this before, we're called the fire department, but those are kind of the least thing we do is putting out major fires. It's everything else. But that's okay.
That's a preferred way.
Yep, that's how we want it. You know, a lot of those are, you know, chimney fires or, you know, an electrical outlet starts smoking or something wrong there, and we can go there and quickly take care of it, and, you know, damage doesn't go anywhere, nobody gets hurt. So there's a lot of those, and some of those are mutual aid fires going to help other departments. We have, in Holmes County, you know, we have it set up, what we call our box alarms or, you know, mutual aid alarms. They're set up that anytime you call in and say there's smoke or there's fire in my house or my business, whatever, you're usually going to get at least your home department and two other departments automatically dispatched. And we're going to go there, and if that first department gets there and says, hey, we can handle it, or the fire's out, and we just turn around and come back. But we're going to start all those resources right at the very beginning and then find out what we have. And if it is a fire, great. We've got everybody coming. And we don't have to wait. We don't want to wait till somebody gets there and says, oh, yeah, we need
like,
more
this
help.
This is bad.
Yeah. So all that's already set up. So a lot of times, you know, a neighboring department might get that call of some smoke or whatever, get there, find out, hey, we can handle it. And, you know, I'm sure people have seen us drive through Millersburg, lights and sirens on, and we get through a couple lights and then turn our stuff off and turn around. And they're probably like, well, did you just do that to get through the lights?
No. There's,
I think we've had 38 calls that are what we call dispatch and cancel en route. So we're out the door, lights and sirens, and then either dispatch gets new information or somebody gets on scene that, oh, you're not needed. And so we get
change of plans.
Yep. So, and usually that happens by the time we get out of the station and get through Millersburg that we find out we're not needed. So when, if you see us turn the stuff off, we weren't doing that just to get through traffic. So yeah, fire calls, have been
steady.
Pretty much the same, nothing new there. EMS, that, you know, obviously that's where our numbers are up. I think a little over 100 calls more for EMS this year. And nothing out of the ordinary there. There's just medical calls, injuries. We had motor vehicle crashes with injuries. We were about 33. Crashes with no injuries, we're at 23. Those numbers have been, they're kind of right on par, just more of them. And then we have what kind of in our category, and our reporting is hazmat related, and that falls under not just chemical spills or things like that. That's natural gas leaks, carbon monoxide, anything electrical related, power lines down. That all kind of falls under hazmat.
Because it's hazardous.
Right. And it's a material. So,
ta-da!
Obviously, our big one, and we've talked about it before, natural gas leaks or the smell of natural gas. We have always quite a few of those, and carbon monoxide.
I've heard several of those come across.
Yeah, and obviously wintertime, those are a little bit more. And I made a note, to kind of talk about that a little bit of, we've talked about smoke detectors. We'll make sure those are good. This is a good time, first of the year, to maybe double check those. If you don't have any, get some new ones. If they're getting close to 10 years old or older, maybe time to replace them. We do have those available for our residents that we install through the American Red Cross, or you can get them just about any Walmart hardware store anywhere.
But you can't beat free smoke detectors that are installed for you.
That's right.
And make sure they work.
Yep. So, we go through them, show you how to test them, go over a little safety plan of, hey, get out, stay out. This is where you should meet. This is what you do. Call 911. What we want to know. And then Red Cross, we do those. Red Cross sends us more. So that's good for everybody. But carbon monoxide detectors, that's something we don't have those available. So, but I really encourage, people to get those. We just recently had a call where just for an illness, not knowing anything might be up. And on our, what we call first in bag on our EMS units, that's what we carry in to do basic checks, whatever. We have a little CO monitor clipped on the bag. And that's just
in case.
We've had it a couple times where we didn't know it was a CO incident, and now we're exposed to it, and then find out later that now our EMTs were in there with carbon monoxide and, may have issues. So I think the guys on that call, they maybe got 5 feet in the door, and that alarm started going off right away on the bag. So
they're like, uh-oh.
That alerted them right away that, hey, we have something going on here. We need to get this patient and ourselves out of here. So they did that. We went out with, took the fire engine out with a monitor. One of the guys went in on an, we go in on air packs for that.
Mm-hmm.
An alarm will start our monitor's alarm at 30 parts per million for carbon monoxide. We were getting 5 to 600 just inside the door.
Oh my.
So we were, this person was real close. Yeah. We were, that's just how quick it is. And, this person had no idea that that was the issue. We went out there not expecting that, but fortunately we were able to, figure that out right away. And then, she got the treatment she needed to take care of that. Cause it could have been very significant for her.
Well, in the winter, it's a lot easier for that to build up because your windows are all closed and you can't get out.
Right.
And
especially even newer houses, everything is sealed up so good and insulated. And you have the doors closed, windows shut, and it, overnight that can build up. That's the where we see a lot of deaths is overnight. You go to sleep and you have no idea, and that's where you want, that's where that alarm is.
And you just stay asleep then.
That's right. And so yeah, you know, you got any type of a furnace or any water heater, anything like that, that runs off natural gas, propane, anything that's burning a fuel, you'll want, you need a CO detector.
And they don't last as long as smoke detectors.
No, those are rated about 5 to 7 years.
Some do.
Right. So it has a type of chemical in it that obviously is sensitive to carbon monoxide, but that breaks down over time. So that's why those don't last near as long as carbon monoxide detector or smoke detectors. And I've also, I get asked, well, where do I put those up high? Where are those like smoke detectors? Carbon monoxide generally doesn't rise or fall. It's about the same weight as the air, so it'll mix. And I always tell people to put it in the air that you live in. So if it's, you know, at your height or where you in the 2 to 6 foot range area, put it in the air that you live in. And you don't want it right next to that appliance or that furnace, because it's going to give off a little bit of carbon monoxide.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't want it right next to your furnace or right next to your stove. You want it obviously closer to bedrooms, your living areas, sleeping areas. That's where you want it. You don't want it right in that utility area or whatever you might have that's burning a fuel. You want that, like I said, where you live, in the air that you live in and the area that you live in.
And so what are some of the symptoms that people could have if they have carbon monoxide in their house?
It can vary, but a lot of people describe it feeling like they have the flu. They headache, body aches, nausea, vomiting. I mean, the one that really set it off, I think, for everybody around Holmes County was it was bad to where everybody was very, very sick in the house. And the first thought was food poisoning. Because I think there was 3 or 4 people in the house, and they were all progressively getting very ill. And I mean all the ills.
Oh, boo.
Of all the, yes.
And all the exits.
All the ills. And so, like I said, first thought was if they were at something, had food poisoning, whatever. And then, it started, our monitors that we check blood pressure, all that stuff, started showing some issues with carbon monoxide, like they had carbon monoxide in their system. Come to find out, like, they had levels in the thousands.
Ooh.
In this house. And it ended up being, they all got sent to hyperbaric chambers, and I think the first 3 or 4 EMTs that were on scene were sent to hyperbaric, because they were in there for so long, not knowing that carbon monoxide was the issue. And so, and there's not a lot of hyperbaric chambers. We don't have 5 of those at Pomerene. We don't have any. So they were flying people to Pittsburgh, to Cleveland, Columbus, that they're few and far between. So yeah, it was pretty significant. And that's where we start carrying monitors on the bags and taking it very, very, very serious for us.
Well, for sure. Well, because if you guys go down, you can't help
right.
whoever's in there.
Right. So yeah, that's, Finn, that's what I want to encourage is getting a carbon monoxide detector. At least one in your sleeping areas, whatever. And cause it just seems more and more of an issue.
Like I said, we've been hearing a bunch more calls coming across the radio, whether they're yours or, somebody else's, but
all over the country. I mean, it's just, and unfortunately you see those, that the deaths come in the middle of the night. Somebody doesn't show up for work and they call and somebody goes there to check on them. And sure enough, they are in bed still and house full of carbon monoxide. So that's what we want to keep from happening around here.
We want everybody to be safe and wake up the next morning.
Yes.
All right. Well, we're going to take a little break here. We'll have more with Chief Brian Rafferty from Holmes Fire District 1 on WKLM. We have returned here in your second half of the 8 a.m. hour. I have Chief Brian Rafferty from Holmes Fire District 1. And in the first part of the hour, we started talking about last year's numbers, and we got talking about CO and CO2. Oh, yeah.
Carbon monoxide or carbon dioxide. CO2 is carbon dioxide.
Right. Yes. I'm like, I got to make sure I have my right things.
Yeah, we're not dealing with that.
Very, very easy switchy mixies, yes. But very different in the end. So we got some more numbers from last year.
Yeah. So just, you know, still going on that. Our average, what we call average churnout time, that's the time from when we get dispatched. You know, you call 911, give them their information, then they send out our alert to us and dispatches. And then until we go en route, so that's either getting an ambulance, which is obviously a little bit quicker, or we get our fire gear on, get loaded up in the truck, and get that out the door. That takes a little bit longer, but our average turnout time for last year for EMS was 1:17.
Nice.
So, I mean, that's daytime, nighttime, whatever, that's our average time. And then for our first out engine, for any type of fire call, whatever, the turnout time for that was 2:27. So
still good with giving everything you have to do to get one of them out.
Yep. That's, you know, like I said, the members getting geared up, getting in a truck. You know, obviously it's a much bigger truck. You don't just start that up and pull the lever and put it in drive. There's a little bit to get that thing moving. So yeah, 2:27. That's pretty quick. And same for EMS, just over 1 minute to get out the door. So, and you know, that's just, you know, with us being staff, that's what that provides, is you're not waiting, you know, 5 to 10 minutes for people to get there and get out the door. We're getting out the door a lot of times less than, I mean, that's our average time. So
right.
A lot of times it can be less than 1 minute. We're starting out the door. So yeah, those are all real good.
Those are very good times.
Our average response time, so that's from being dispatched to getting on scene, is 5:19. So
You guys have a pretty big area.
Right. So we're covering, you know, a good chunk of Monroe Township, obviously all Hardy and Millersburg, and then Mechanic Township. So we go down, you know, Lake Buckhorn, Saltillo, Bex Mills area. We're way down there sometimes. We don't have a lot of calls down there, but that takes some time to get down there. I always say you can't get there from here. You have to get down there and then make a turn and go over a hill.
There's no easy way there.
Yeah, it's... So, yeah, that's, you know, just over 5 minutes to get on scene. That's a really good time. You know, and then we kind of break stuff down by our areas. So of those almost 1,400 calls, just under 700, we were actually at 696 calls were within the village of Millersburg. Like I said, we have, you know, a couple nursing homes now in the village and some assisted living and apartments in the village. So that's a lot of our calls. So that just about half the calls, or a little over, maybe a little over half the calls, were in the village. Hardy Township is 411 calls. And we have, you know, two nursing homes just north of the village in Hardy Township. So a lot of calls there. Mechanic Township was 116 calls, and Monroe Township was 108. So obviously that's where, you know, we have the high school, middle school, some of those areas. You know, and this is all calls. This is fire alarms, crashes, EMS calls. That covers all, you know, from those numbers in those areas. And then just, you know, going to the other townships, you know, we're less than 50, and that's, you know, Kilbuck Prairie, Berlin Township, the other townships in Holmes County, not too many. We went to Coshocton County to assist them, either fire, EMS, 12 times. So, yeah, pretty much on par with where we're at usually every year in those areas. So nothing new there, I don't think.
It's nice to hear these numbers. People can hear what you guys are doing.
Yeah,
and, yeah, you know, you're getting out quick. You're responding to a lot of things. You're mutualing to things. And so you're keeping busy.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and coming up this year, we have a new truck being built. We actually ordered it in November of 23. And we're hopefully going to see it April or May, is what I'm told now.
Those things take time, though.
Well, they take way longer than they used to. But, Yeah, anymore to get a fire engine or even ambulances now are at 3 to 4 years from the time you order it before you get it. So it takes a lot of planning to start the, you got to be thinking way ahead to get those going. So
you can't wait until the truck is dying.
You need it. Yeah, you should have been thinking about it at least 3 years before you think you're going to need it. This truck being built, we knew it was coming out. It's for we call it a tanker. So it basically hauls water to a fire. So it'll go either behind the fire engine and it just provides
water,
a lot of water. And then it goes, and we call it a tanker shuttle. So it's our tanker, and then all our mutual aid partners bring in a tanker, and they might go to a pond or to a hydrant. Somewhere there's a fill site. They go refill and then bring that water back to the fire, and that's all they do. They just drive back and forth and bring water. So our tanker, you know, we knew about this time it was going to be replaced. The one we had was a 1996. You know, it was getting so close 30 to 30 years
old.
But unfortunately, back in 23, we found some issues with the frame, and you know, it had reached the end of its life a little sooner than we had hoped. So we had to take it out of service sooner, and had to use some backup equipment. But this truck hopefully will be done. It'll haul 3,000 gallons of water. You know, so our fire engine holds 1,000 gallons. This will bring another 3,000 gallons of water. So it's like bringing three more fire engines. And can provide that water, and you know, that's the key, is those first few minutes at any type of fire is
having the water
and getting the water onto the fire. So this is going to help us a lot. It's being built in Apple Creek. It's Reberland Equipment. They build vacuum tankers. Wayne County has used them for a lot of years. They're all over, but Western Homes Fire District, they have two now, and we'll have this one. It kind of opens it up. If we have any type of water source, a creek or a pond, that doesn't necessarily have to have a dry hydrant already in place, we can set up a float and some suction hose, and it's just like a big shop vac. Or like some like to refer it to the same type of trucks that go to Port-a-Johns and clean those out.
I like the shop vac picture.
I won't say
better.
What people call it, but if you just use your imagination, what it does, that's what they call the truck. But it's the same thing. It's just a big shop vac, essentially. And if you've got any type of water source with a little bit of water, and you can get water out of it, and it's real quick. So, yeah, we're looking forward to getting that. I know it's in paint right now. That's been kind of the holdup, is everything's backed up there, but once they get the body back, and we've had the truck chassis for a good year, they'll get that in place and start putting, you know, all the bells and whistles on it. And
like literally bells and whistles.
Yeah, bells and whistles and all the stuff to mount equipment, and we'll get that in service hopefully before summer for sure. So it'll take a little bit of training. We'll spend some time training on it. It'll be a little bit different beast than we're used to, and different operationally, but yeah, we'll spend some time with it, and it's long overdue.
Definitely. I mean, when you get into vehicles like that, once you're hitting that 30 years, it's
yeah,
and definitely.
And you know, I think we've maybe talked costs. You know, this one we're looking at just under $600,000 for this truck to haul water. It does have a pump on it as well, so it can fight fire if it gets there, and it's the only one there. It can fight fire as well. Has hoses on it, everything like that. So, but yeah, I think the truck it replaced, you know, 30 years ago was, I found the paperwork was just over $200,000 in 1996.
Prices have gone up a little.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, but with it taking time, we can, you know, start putting money away. We can put money, we put this money into CDs to earn more interest over this time, and it helps, you know, defer some of the costs and not using all the tax money that we have for a truck. So we have a little bit of time. We can save, build some interest, and then pay it when we get it. So it ends up working out, but they're still so expensive.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a quick little break here. We've got hometown sports, and then we'll wrap up with Chief Rafferty at the end of the hour. here on WKLM. And we're going to have one last time here with Chief Brian Rafferty from Holmes Fire District 1. And we've done a lot of looking back, a little looking forward, and we got a little more looking forward. You guys have some grant funding and things that you can
utilize. Pretty aggressive on grants, obviously, you know, talking about the cost of trucks and equipment. And so we've been working really hard on grants. We were just toward the end of the year received through the state fire marshal for Mark's radios, which is, you know, what we use to communicate. It's a statewide system. So
it's a really cool system.
Yeah. The benefit, we can, if we got to go to some, there's one large scale event and either people from far away are coming to us or we're going somewhere far away, we all have this channels that we can communicate. It's most of the state of Ohio, I think, now uses the same system. So it's already in our radios that we have a channel for. I mean, we could go to Western Ohio and have a channel for that county in our radio that we could use to communicate with them. And so, and we don't have to, you know, all we have to do is have the radios. We don't have to pay for towers and all that stuff like used to be in the past. That's all covered. You know, we do have to pay, they call user fees, it's like $5 per radio per month. But like I said, we don't have to maintain any of the infrastructure for the towers and all that stuff. So, and it helps us, you know, we do go to the neighboring counties every once in a while. So we have all those channels. Same if they come here, they can communicate with us. But we were able to get a grant through the state fire marshals for, I believe we got around 42,000. We had applied for, I think 47,000, 48,000. Then we got 42 of it, but that purchased us one truck radio and seven portable radios.
Awesome.
And we had to, we covered the last little bit to be able to get the full quote we had, but that tells you a little bit of what the cost of a radio is.
They're not cheap.
They are not cheap. You know, you're looking $5,000 to $7,000 for a radio. So yeah, we were able to get that grant and get some newer, and they're just like cell phones. It's like you get some radios in and that technology after 5-10 years is obsolete and they don't want it to work. You know, it's the same thing. It's, they have probably something with the makers of radios and there's only so many radios you can get that work. So you got to keep upgrading and stay ahead of that. But yeah, we were able to take advantage of that and get some more radios. You know, the Holmes County Education Foundation, we were able to get a grant through them for like CPR training to get some equipment and to provide CPR training in the community. And, you know, we're looking at not only if somebody wants to do like American Heart Association mm-hmm. certified CPR training, they may need that for their workplace or whatever. You know, we're able to set that up. Or, you know, we have some businesses, they don't want to do that, but they want to at least
have somebody trained a little bit.
Yeah, just getting over that fear of doing CPR or what, you know,
it can be scary.
Yeah, they have an AED in their break room and nobody's ever looked at it and they don't know how to use it and they don't want
to. It doesn't help how to use it if you don't know how to.
So we can come in and just, we can do a basic CPR. This is, if it's just, you know, you don't have to do mouth to mouth, just do compressions and how to do that and what it, go over that and then show them how to use an AED and that you're not going to shock somebody accidentally. It's only going to do it if it is necessary. So a lot of them get over that fear, and then once they do that, then they might want to do the certified one. Mm-hmm. But they get over that initial fear of it, and so we're going to try to push that out a little more and do some of those. You know, we've done a couple businesses already, and we're talking with a school, and even if we go out, like the football teams, there's mm-hmm. even the kids on the teams of just showing them some basic CPR and just to get over that fear of it. So we're hoping to use that money to push that out. And, you know, we're looking at more. You know, Bureau Workers' Comp has grants that we've applied for before, the power load cots that we've gotten past just to help prevent injuries. So we're usually up for those. About every 3 to 4 years you can reapply and be included, and we're kind of in that timeline.
That window.
So we're looking at that, and lot of other, and we got quite a bit. Lieutenant Peterman with the department has works quite a bit on that, and I know we have another one in through the state for some fire gear, our turnout coats and pants. I think it's we're looking at a $50,000 grant to hopefully get 10 sets of gear. So that usually runs about $5,000 just to outfit a firefighter from helmet to coat, pants, boots,
all the jazz.
Yeah, so that's about $4,000 or $5,000 a firefighter, and that's usually tailored pretty close to fit when we get those. So hopefully we'll be able to get that and get 9 or 10 sets of gear, and that just helps if we can offset some of those costs. That helps us pay for that fire engine or something else down the line,
and use taxpayer money wisely.
Yeah, so all this money is that's our tax money that we've paid to the state or whatever.
Right, bring it back home.
We want to try to get as much back as we can. So yeah, we're always working on that just to help the department and help the community.
And as always, don't be afraid to reach out if you need anybody at the District 1 Fire Department.
That's right. I mean, we our public service calls, smoke detectors, you know, we do quite a bit of those. I think just earlier when we had some snow, I assisted one of our veterans in the community, had a dead battery, had to get to the doctor's appointment, and you know, he's walking with a cane, and so I got him jump started, got him going down the road. That's just, you know, we're an all inclusive hazards and help kind of department, not just the fire department.
And that's what our community's all about.
We don't have enough room on the building to put the full name of
everything. do it all.
Yeah.
So, Homes Fire all.
Yeah. And that's, you know, all the departments in the county are the same way. Everybody's they're here to serve the community and do the best they can. So, yeah.
Well, thanks for coming in.
Yeah. If we get this snow, make sure you're driving safe. Be ready. Because it's about that time for the big snows to start.
Shh.
I want it. I've plowed enough snow in my years to know that weekend. Just saying.
It is. Yeah. So that was Chief Brian Rafferty with Homes Fire District 1. We're going to take a moment and be back with Hometown News on WKLM.